This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Welcome to Stupidity, home of the greatest media mind ever to walk the planet.
I tell you what, man, he's a literal titan across the entire media landscape.
Okay, so here's the deal. He's a true icon in every sense of the word.
He's loved and feared more than any being to grace this planet.
There's two guys. A man with a voice that sounds like Barry White and Beyonce had a Jewish baby.
God himself would pay $39.99 for a cameo. Fact of the matter is, you are about to embark on a transcendent experience that can only be described as psychological nudity.
This is Stugatz, and this is Stupidity.
Here we go, Jim.
Tony!
So we're still here. It's the next morning. We're still waiting for Devin. We've been up all night. We're exhausted. We're tired. But we have an obligation to our audience to deliver at all costs, even if it costs both of us our lives, to deliver you an episode of Stupidity with a guy who finally wrote a book about what it means to be a miserable Mets fan. This is our obligation. We take it very seriously. We've been up all night. Mike's been yelling at me. I've been yelling back at Mike. We never yelled at each other until last night. Devin has completely fractured our relationship. Inexplicably. Mike, I'm wondering, is Evel Knievel still in your backyard?
I just want the chainsaws to stop. I just want to sleep.
I just want Devin to show up.
I just want to ask him about Mookie Wilson.
I just want to ask him about nails.
Hold on. I think he's coming.
What? Stupidity!
Stu Gatz here for my friends over at DraftKings. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odd boost, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DAN. New customers, bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. How about that? $5, get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DAN, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey, Devin. What's up, man?
Sorry about yesterday. I didn't even know this was on the schedule.
You're good, man. We made fun of you. We spent 20 minutes making fun of you.
That's fair. That's justified.
Good. All right, good. I'll
go back and listen, see if you got any good shots. Hold on a second. Where's my
camera? At one point, I said the only thing more frustrating than being a Mets fan is being a fan of Devin. Look at his face.
I can give you. Yeah. Why do you think I wrote a book? It means you're inside.
Devin, how old are you?
I'm 44.
Okay. And where are you from originally? Just out of
I'm from about an hour north of New York City. Not far enough to call upstate, but Peekskill.
Okay. All right.
And now I'm in Boston.
We're from Long Island. If you're north of the Bronx, you're upstate.
Yeah, we're Long Island.
Sometimes, like, if you meet people from, like, Albany or Rochester, and you say from upstate New York, they're like, You know, right. You know what I mean? Like, yes. They give you one of those.
Yes. You also,
you're a New Yorker.
You wrote the single most important magazine article ever when you wrote about Bartolo Colon's one home run. My man.
A whole chapter in the book, man. And his memoir came out after I finished my book. So I got to go back and beef it up. And
there you go. Right. And he went back and he beefed it up. I mean,
he did two good points. Yes. Yeah. He spent an entire career beefing it up.
Wait, Devin, I want you to help me out here. I'm from Long Island. So I grew up in the 80s. I'm 47 years old. So, but I grew up at a time where the Jets were playing at Shea Stadium. The Mets were also playing at Shea Stadium. Listen, being a Mets fan wasn't enough for me. I had to couple it with also being a Jet fan, all right? But is Mikey A cheating here where he's also from Long Island, okay?
Yeah.
He's a Jets fan, but he claims to be a Yankees fan.
That claims to awesome. Be. I am a Yankees fan.
Devin, let Devin – hey, you shut your mouth over there and let Devin settle this debate, okay?
It sounds like kind of a cop-out a little bit. Like you don't have the stamina – or the fortitude to take both the Jets and the Mets, so you chicken out and go for the Yankees.
First off, you're right. I don't have the fortitude, but that's not how it happened. I just followed my – I have three older brothers. I followed them. They were Yankee fans.
Okay.
So Don Mattingly fans. That's kind of how it started.
Look, being a Yankee fan fundamentally is repugnant. I think we can all agree about that. But – there are sometimes you're the son of a serial killer. It's not your fault. It's not your fault your dad's a serial killer. But if there's serial killing in your blood.
I understand, Devin, and I understand why we're having you on now because the Mets are supposed to be good. If they weren't going to be good, I wouldn't be hearing from you.
Yeah, no, Mike, we will never fall for supposed to be good again, okay?
Take a break. Are you paying attention to what's going on out there?
Right. We laugh it's supposed to be good.
Yeah, just like Jet fans. We never get our hopes up.
Yes. Right. Well, that is kind of the difference, right? I don't expect anything. I have no expectations.
We have set the bar so low. Do you have kids, Devin?
I have two.
Okay. And now, are they Mets fans? How old are the kids?
My son is 8 and is very much a Mets fan.
Okay.
I've groomed him from the start. My daughter actually likes basketball. She doesn't really care about it. I mean, she's a Mets fan, but right. She doesn't care that much. She wears a Noah Syndergaard free giveaway City Field shirt all the time, but I don't think she cares who's on it.
The reason I ask that is I also have two children. I have two 16-year-old girls. One of them constantly asks me when we're watching the Mets, Daddy, why'd you do this to me? Have you had that experience?
My son isn't old enough to have that. Okay. He's getting there. It's funny though, because I do realize maybe it's the combination of the book and the way things have gone recently. It's like he's picking it up. You know what I mean? It's like he's like, did you do something to me? You know, like, am I? Because my wife, who's from here, keeps trying to pull him to the Red Sox. And this has actually been a slight source of tension in my marriage, right? Because sometimes she'll do it. And I'm like, you stop that. Stop it.
Right.
And, you know, if she wants him for the Celtics, okay. It's hard to fight some of that, but like, and she doesn't care about football, so he doesn't really care about football. But like, as long as I got the Mets, almost kind of like he can do whatever he wants with his life as long as he roots for the Mets.
As long as you have that bond. Right?
We have a philosophy in my house. My kids will be Yankee fans. I have two boys. They will be Yankee fans, but they don't have to be Jet fans. As long as they're not Patriot fans, I'll love them. If they're Patriot fans, then they have to move out.
This is a. You know, we're now in Boston. We moved here 2 years ago, back to my wife's hometown. And so it is definitely like a worry about the Patriots. He's good on the Mets because he already goes to school and is like, I'm a Mets fan. What are you going to do about it? Mm. And especially since like the Red Sox stink right now, all of his little friends, you know, what are you going to say? The Pats worry me, but to me, I think, you know, they're about to go off a cliff too. And they know it.
I feel like being a fan of those teams is kind of like cheating. I think you're right. Like, being a Yankee fan is cheating. Like, you know, yeah. Like, listen, you have to go through the trials and tribulations, because here's what I maintain. When the Mets or Jets actually finally win something, it's going to feel so much better because of the journey, Devin, the journey we all took together. And that was a journey of misery, you know?
Dance naked in the streets.
Yes, of course.
Celebrate. Right. I mean, look at how the Mets celebrate historically. We don't just win and players mob each other on the field. We tear the stadium down. Like, it's awesome when we win things.
Yes.
Whereas the Yankees, it's kind of like, you've done what we expected.
Right. Golf clap. Right.
You may go home now and enjoy your lives.
Exactly.
Right. 1 hour of leave.
Yes, exactly. You can grow your hair 2 inches. Congratulations.
Devin Gordon is with us. So many ways to lose. The amazing true story of the best worst team in sports. I love the title. Let's start here. Yeah. How'd you become a Mets fan?
So I was about seven years old, 1983-84, right? And when you're 7 years old, you make choices for very simple childhood reasons, especially if you don't inherit a team like Mike did from his big brothers and started himself on the wrong path by going to the Yankees from birth.
That's right, yep.
I was 7 and a half. The Mets were blue and orange. Their colors were really fun, and it looked like the Yankees were wearing prison uniforms. And so that was one thing. Right. And they had a star player whose name was Strawberry. Strawberry! I was 7 years old. It was the coolest thing in the world. That's all it took. If you're seven and you have a player named Strawberry, you're going to root for that team.
And then a Dr. K came in, and then, like, slowly things started snowballing, right?
You know, it became easy to root for the Mets because they were winning, and they were exciting, and they were thrilling. And the Yankees weren't terrible in that era, but they were kind of middling. They never lived up to expectations. Steinbrenner was yelling at everyone. Mattingly's back was locking up. Dave Winfield was angry. The Mets were lunatics. Lunatics, straight up lunatics. And to me, that was just so fun.
Yeah, it was a really fun time. Perhaps the best time to be a Mets fan in the mid-80s. Yeah,
and that's how I got indoctrinated, right? So, sure. You know, as you know, being, you know, a similar age to me, although, you know, you're a few years older, so I think that means you probably had a dose of misery, right? Like, this
has
been an extra special for you.
Yes.
To actually won.
Yeah, 86 was extra special. I was actually, you know, a million people claimed to be at 86 Game 6. I was actually one of the people who were there. And my dad was a Red Sox fan. And so my dad.
Oh, man.
Now at that time, Devin, you could bring whatever you wanted into a stadium. And so my dad brought a bottle of champagne into that stadium, and he cracked it open before the ninth inning. You like that?
Now I'm starting to see where you got it from. Right? You got the Mets version.
Yeah.
Of what he gave you as a Yankee fan. And as a Red Sox.
As a Red Sox fan, yes.
I mean, and he, you know, oh my God, I'm just trying to imagine what that must have been like. See, like, the thing that all my friends and all the people, you know, I grew up with, the thing everybody I feel like claims to have been at is the ticker tape parade. Right.
Yeah.
And I always say that the only two people who admit that they weren't at the ticker tape parade was me and Doc Gooden. I wasn't there. I was in school because, you know, I'm not the kind of kid who's got the courage to, like, blow off school and try to get on a train and go to a ticker tape parade at 10. But I did think about it.
Okay. Well, listen, I'm glad you thought about it, Devin. You really stepped out of your comfort zone.
There's a math test today. I don't know.
Right. I got you. Why'd you decide to write that? So you're a miserable Mets fan, although you did have 86 and you had the Subway Series in 2000. Why'd you decide to write this book?
Well, you know, that was the high point of my, not just my sports life, but my actual life. And it was age 10, right? Yeah. Age 10. And there's something that parallels the, you know, sort of gradual, you know, dawning realization as a Mets fan of what things are really going to be, that sort of parallels what happens with your life, right? And I'm not saying that in necessarily depressing, despairing ways, that it's all downhill from here. There are ups and there are downs, and sometimes they happen really, really close together. And that's a good lesson that you get from the Mets and not from, say, the Mariners, right? Or the Lions, other teams that, you know, are losers, but don't do it with anywhere near the flair and panache that we do. So it seemed like we had this unique identity, this unique DNA as a team that hadn't quite been captured in a lot of the things that get written about the Mets, because usually most Mets books are about 1969 when we won the World Series, 1986 when we won the World Series. There were like 60 other years, and those to me are more Metsy than the 2 years that are sort of the exceptions that prove the rule. I mean, doesn't it feel that way to you?
100%. Describe to the audience what it feels like, what it means to be Metsy, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, that is kind of an adjective.
Because there's a special brand of, I've said this forever, Devin, there is a special brand of losing that we go through that I can't articulate, but you wrote a fucking book about it. So
yeah,
it.
Yeah. It's like, you know, there's, like I say in the book, there's a difference between being bad, right, which anyone can do, and all of us do at various junctures in our lives, and being gifted at losing, which takes a special something in your DNA that not all of us possess. In fact, very few of us possess. It is a kind of Einsteinian genius that just comes to us naturally, you know, like it just flows out of our fingertips. Like most teams have an experience of losing in dramatic fashion in a playoff series. That happens every year. We lose in extra innings to our rival on a walk-off walk. We lose in the bottom of the ninth inning at home in the game 7 of the NLCS when our best hitter stares at 3 straight pitches with the tying run on second base.
Yeah, left the bat on his shoulder, yes.
That tying run at second base was also the guy who made the greatest playoff catch in postseason history.
Yes.
All he had to do was run 120 feet and he would right.
And D. Chavez, Mike, do you have something?
It's funny you brought. I graduated college with Willie Randolph's daughter. And so Willie Randolph gave the commencement speech. And he said, if those closing lines were, and if there is one piece of advice I can give you, it's swing the bat. Swing the bat. Good Lord, Carlos, swing the bat.
Swing the bat.
It just erupted the crowd, Mets and Yankee fans.
Well, I was actually there. This is my example of the World Series that you were actually at in 86. Right. I was actually there at that game. I was behind home plate and in the upper deck, so I was about 3 miles up. Sure. And, you know, when Endy made that catch, I Shea Stadium, like the upper deck would bounce.
Yes.
When things got and I really thought it was going to collapse. That's mm-hmm. how. And I was like, I don't care. Great way to die. I'm all right. And I was also sure that we were going to make the world. Like, I was sure we were going to win the World Series. It was the only time in my Mets life, including 86, where I was sure we were going to win the World Series. And that's like, as you know, that should be the first sign to a Mets fan that something is about to go horribly wrong. And of course it did. Yeah. And Beltran, the other thing about Beltran was that, like, a lot of people thought he didn't have the inner soul to come through in the clutch, except that in a very, again, Metsy way, that is just this sort of expected irony. He was also, as ever, like, he was the most clutch playoff hitter of his generation, right? He had driven in the only run that night. He would have been, no question, the NLCS MVP if he had gotten a single and tied the game, right? He batted like 900 in that series. And at the same time, it didn't surprise anyone that he struck out on 3 pitches, did it?
No, not at all. I expected it, to be honest.
Without
that. Yeah. Did you
feel, Devin, you were so right. This is one of the great postseason players ever, Carlos Beltran.
Unbelievable. That's why
he got all that money because of what he did in Houston the year before.
The whole reason we signed him is because he almost single-handedly won the World Series.
We signed him for that moment, and in that moment, he left his bat on his shoulder. Yeah.
Do you think, and I've always felt this personally, but I wonder if you agree, that it would have been slightly like 1% less painful if it had been a fastball? Because the curveball, there's something.
I'm sorry. Yes,
you're right. Yes. There's something just impotent. Your friend Pablo Torre yesterday on ESPN Daily, when I spoke to him, referred to it as impotence. And that was just the perfect word. And now I'm going to use that word forever because that's how it felt. Like a fastball, he blows a fastball by you at 100 miles an hour when you're leaning on a car.
Fine.
And it's over quickly. It's at least it's just like, boom.
Right. That curveball felt like it took forever. And
just like, he paused in midair.
I remember where I was. I was at the Capitol Grill in Fort Lauderdale throwing up my steak because the
I don't know. Like, this is one of the things that happens in when you watch something live like that, is sound travels, you know, it takes longer for the sound, right? And so I didn't know it was a strike until, you know, like the Cardinals were already celebrating because they knew. So we could see them jumping up and down.
Right.
Before we even heard the umpire call a strike or that sound carry up. And really that's how we lost, is because they went nuts.
Right.
And, oh, it was horrible. I can't. I've never watched the footage. Never.
No, but Mikey A, the ump really did milk it, like the anticipation. He made you wait. The Cardinals knew better. They just, like, they knew they were playing the Mets.
It wasn't a questionable pitch. It's not like head on, like, oh, no, the ump. And, I mean, let's be honest. How often as an umpire do you get to ring a guy up on strike three in game seven? Like, he's like, there's no way. Like, he's going to make this decision.
Yeah. He's probably the ump's fucking guy. He's going down in history with this one.
But, Mike, you know what I love about Devin is as he is reliving this, you can see the pain in his face. It's
unbelievable. I'm enjoying watching both of you with the pain on your face, to be honest.
I really have never watched it. There's a whole chapter in my book about Andy Chavez, because who I love and is really one of my favorite Mets of all time. And then, obviously, it ends with that strikeout. But I've never watched the footage because I was there. And I've always said, like, you don't rewatch The Red Wedding if you were sitting in the pews.
Right? That's a good point. Yes.
I don't need to see it, and I never will.
Not a chance you get that reference, Stugatz. Not a chance you get that reference.
But I was a good partner who played along. How about that?
I got the reference. Well done.
Thank you. I'm a little amazed but anyway, we'll leave that alone.
Don't be amazed by anything I do. So many ways to lose. The amazing true story of the best worst team in sports. Devin Gordon with us here on Stupidity. I'm excited. Feel free to send me a copy of the book.
Oh, I will. I'm getting it to you right now. Yeah.
I'm excited to read it. Do you have, like, is there a medal stand of examples of unbelievable ways the Mets have lost that you would be able to do for us? Do you have, like, a bronze, silver, and gold medalist here? Or,
well, I mean, you know, I mentioned, I think gold is Endy.
Yes, gold is Endy. You're right.
Silver is Kenny Rogers with the walk-off walk.
Yep.
Right? The walk-off walk in the 1999 NLCS.
I love that.
In game six, extra innings. Mike Piazza hits one of the biggest home runs in Mets history off John Smoltz to tie up that game. Amazing game. Honestly, one of the best games I've ever watched in my life. It was like 9-9, 10-10. And Kenny Rogers, who was like a late season acquisition and actually pitched quite well as a spot starter, walked in the winning run to Andrew Jones, who it's really hard to walk Andrew Jones, by the way. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but Andrew Jones was like 19 years old. He struck out 300 times or something like that.
Yeah, and he would swing at anything. Yes.
He would swing at literally everything except the pitch 14 feet outside.
Why? Because the Mets.
If you go back and watch the replay of Kenny Rogers throwing that ball for, he wanted nothing to do with that pitch. He just wanted to get out of there and into his offseason. So that's number two. And let me think about number three.
Okay.
Because the thing that came to mind is somewhat, it's sort of a tie between Luis Castillo dropping a routine pop fly to hand the Yankees, you know, one of the regular seasons.
There could also be a Matt Harvey going, you know, the next night going in as a reliever and never being the same again. I mean,
oh, right. Oh, my God. That was the same. And so, but the other one that I'm also thinking of is very recent. You know what? I was going to say the 2019 game when we blew a 6-run lead in the bottom of the ninth in the Nationals, because that was such an important game. But you know what the answer is? The answer is Tom Glavin. Tom Glavin killing us on the last day of the season in 2007 when we were finishing off blowing a 7.5 game lead in like 17 days or 17 games, like it was chasing us with a machete. Yep. And oh my God. And Tom Glavin, who's a sleeper agent from the Braves, come to pitch for the Mets, waiting this whole time to stab us in the gut. He's the starter on the, you know, the last game of the season that is effectively a must win game for us to get in the playoffs. Yeah. He gave up like 7 runs in the first inning. It was over before we even came up to the plate. And then after the game, he was like, you know, no big deal. You win, you lose. It happens. And then he went back to Atlanta in the offseason.
Yeah.
I mean, it was – I hate you, Tom Glavin. I hate you.
go ahead. I'm sorry.
So I guess that's it. Like, I mean, you know, you might have other options, but those are the three that sort of leapt into mind.
No, I love yours. I'm wondering how many other organizations do you think could you write a book about? Like the one you wrote about the Mets, like maybe the Jets. Is that it?
The Jets, the Knicks are definitely
all my teams.
Yeah, I know. All mine too. You know, one thing I realized and I learned over the course of it, since it's interesting that you asked, the Texas Rangers have a sneakily humiliating and catastrophic history that we overlook, in part because it's just not that – it's not a team that you see on television. Like, most of their humiliations don't happen on national TV. But in the real American context, Texas is just as big as New York.
Right.
George W. Bush owns that team, right? So there's, like, opportunities for sort of grand stage ineptitude when you've got a former president who's running your team. And I don't know if you remember, but they blew the World Series in 2011 every bit as bad as Boston blew it, you know, with, you know, they had the game won.
Yes.
And they made the same mistake as John McNamara made with Bill Buckner, which is they left Nelson Cruz in right field because they wanted him to be on the field when they won the World Series. And of course the ball gets hit to him. It's a hilarious clip if you want to watch someone try to catch a fly ball to end a World Series. And he comes nowhere close. They blow the game and they lose. But Texas has done lots of things like that. You know, by the way, Andy Chavez was supposed to be the defensive replacement.
You're right. Yes.
He was on the bench. He actually got his glove and went out on the field to replace Nelson Cruz.
Right.
He just assumed he was going to. And right. Ron Washington was like, no. Yeah. Come on back.
Yeah.
Andy retires without a World Series ring.
But you're saying that Texas should be getting some criticism as well. Yeah, not, I mean, because no one cares about Texas.
Like, I mean, there's a lot of stuff like that. You know, right. It's not the only example in their history of things like of them doing humiliating things. It's just less examined, like the Mets, like, you know, the Clippers. Right. Ramona Shelburne did an incredible podcast series about all the, you know, nonsense that the Clippers have been.
Sure.
The state of Minnesota, if you rounded up all of their teams, could probably compete. Right.
Yep.
But you know,
but people hate us. Yeah, that's the deal.
It's just there really is no, when you start to drill down, the Cleveland Browns.
Browns. There you go. That's a good one. Yes.
The Cleveland Browns are the one. They are our closest competitor to the best worst title. The only problem with them is it's just not nice to make fun of Cleveland. It's just
not. I got it. Right. But if there's a team out there that loses as well as we do, it would be the Cleveland Browns. You're right.
They're pretty good. They are really gifted.
Mike, you put a question down here. I'm going to answer it for you. Okay. Devin knows the answer to this. Mike wants to know the biggest Met killer of all time. Devin, it's Chipper Jones. Yes.
Chipper Jones. Son Shea.
Chipper Jones named his son Shay.
Yeah.
Which is so savage.
It's awesome.
Yes. I have no choice but to doff my cap. That is incredible troll.
I am always here for petty. And that is just King Petty so right petty. There.
So petty and so mean and so good. I don't know. I chip Larry.
Well done. Yeah. Well, tip of the cap. All right, Devin, I'll get you out of here in a second here. And we appreciate the time. I'm going to say a name and you tell me the first thing that comes to mind. Okay. I'll say a Met name. You tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. Okay. Ralph Kiner.
Kiner's Corner.
There you go. John Stearns.
You know, Jimmy Kimmel's favorite player.
Yeah. Fun fact. That's funny. Dave Kingman.
Kong.
That's perfect, by the way. Kong is perfect.
Leave it there.
That is perfect. Jerry Kuzman.
Kuz.
That's it. Yes. I just like Kuz. That's it. Tom Seaver.
The GOAT. The franchise. R.I.P. Love him.
Yeah. Rusty Staub.
The Grand Orange. The social director of the Mets in the early 70s.
Yep. Gary Carter.
The kid. They called him Camera Carter on the 86 team because he was always smiling for the cameras and he did all those cereal endorsements.
Keith Hernandez.
Oh, I love Keith. Max, Gary, Keith, and Ron is what comes to mind because he's the, you know, he's the spice in the booth for that.
Benny Agbayani.
And the Flying Hawaiian.
Lenny Dykstra.
Lenny Dykstra is the worst Met of all time. He's just an odious, ridiculous.
Yes.
On all levels. But if so, of course, he's a Met.
Right. And we loved him when he was playing, but oh, you're right.
I mean,
right.
He went off the rails with the Phillies, so we got the good Lenny.
Yes, we did. Nails. Dwight Gooden.
Oh, that's just tragedy. Yeah, it's sad. Yeah.
Why do you say that?
It's just so much. He's just
so much potential. Yeah,
so much potential, and he's you know, he's such a haunted guy now. You can tell, and it's just very, very sad.
Yep. Daryl Strawberry.
He's the reason I root for the Mets. Straw. He's the OG as far as I'm concerned.
You're not alone there, my man. Wally Backman.
I wrote in the book, Wally Backman lived his entire life in perfect position to lay down a sack bunt.
You know what I mean? Yes, he did. Yeah. Dykstra on, sack bunt from Wally. Keith drives him in.
Keith drives him home. It was our offense. Like,
Dwight, go shut him down.
Yes. You just described 85, 86. Like, it's basically it. Yeah.
Oh, it's perfect. Ray Knight.
It's funny. I thought Nancy Lopez first, but you know, obviously.
So do I. Every single time, to be honest with you.
Mr. Nancy Lopez, as they call them in the Mets clubhouse.
Yes. Matt Harvey.
The Dark Knight. I feel bad for Matt Harvey. I think he got a little hosed by us.
Okay. Yeah. Tim Tebow.
Oh, I hate Tim Tebow. You know, just a hanger on. You know, just a celebrity athlete, useless, terrible at multiple sports. Enough.
You are so tortured, my friend. So many ways to lose. The amazing true story of the best worst team in sports. Devin Gordon with us. I will get you out of here in a second. Mikey A has a quick question for you. I have a quick game at the end called Devin or Dev Out.
No, I was just curious.
You love the game.
I've never heard it before. I love it.
Wait, did Pablo Torre warn you about what may happen on this podcast? Okay.
Believe me, I was prepared a little bit, but I didn't get out. I heard that. Oh my God.
Go ahead, Mike.
I just want to know, do you think, like, if you were raised right as a Yankee fan, you would have showed up yesterday when you were supposed to? Because I'm wondering if it's a Met thing is the reason.
The Met, you're right. It is a Met thing. If it was a Yankee thing, I just would have blamed it on someone else.
Attaboy.
My man. We are kindred spirits, my friend. All right. We play this game with everyone. It's like when Golic's on, it is Golic or no lick. Okay. So for you, it's Dev in or Dev out.
Okay.
And we'll be quick here. Going to a Yankee game against someone.
All right. I thought that was the question.
Going to a Yankee game. Perfect. Dev out. Perfect. Peeing in the pool. Dev in or Dev out?
Dev out, of course. Come on. Okay.
Dev out, really? I thought Dev in. I mean, we all pee in the pool. Farting under the covers. Dev in, Dev out?
Dev in.
Yeah.
I'm going to mumble that one.
The amount of shame on your face as you admitted to that. Picking your nose. Dev in, Dev out?
Unintentionally, I guess. You know, okay. Dev in, I guess. You know, it's happened.
Ketchup on hot dogs. Dev in, Dev out?
Dev in.
You like ketchup on a hot dog, huh?
Yeah, Dev in. What's wrong with that?
I don't know. Mustard. I feel like, you know,
well, burgers. I do both, but, you know, yeah, I do both.
Okay. All right. Singing in the shower. Dev in, Dev out?
I wish I did. I mean, Dev in, but I don't actually do it is the thing. I don't know why. Right. I just don't.
If you did, what would you sing? What would you sing? Meet the Mets? Meet the Mets.
Meet the Mets. No, I sing, I sing Who Let the Dogs Out.
Okay. Cheering the other NL East team. Cheering for any other NL East team. Dev in, Dev out?
Dev out. Yeah, who would do such a
thing? Marlins Yankees in the World Series.
Oh, I see.
That's what I'm saying.
Yankees.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm saying, can you?
Yankees, you just root for the stadium to fall in.
Okay. Right. Okay. That's an answer.
Let's see the lengths of his love for ketchup. Okay, Mike, ketchup on steak. Dev in, Dev out.
I don't do it, but Dev in. Sure.
Okay. I almost got divorced over it.
really?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's not that far off from steak sauce. Like, you know.
It's embarrassing. Eating food after you dropped it. Dev in, dev out.
Dev in. Depends upon the food. So you left it open, so I'm going to take dev in.
Okay. Shea Stadium, the Apple. Dev in, dev out.
Oh, dev in.
Dev in, right. Yes. I missed that thing. Do you wish you had that thing in your backyard?
Of course. I want the original. I mean, I guess the original was out there in front of City Field by the 7 train, but I would much rather have the original. Of course, yeah.
And I left one player off the list, and I I regret doing this. So just your thoughts real quick, because for me, he is my favorite Met of all time. Mookie Wilson.
Oh, Mookie. Best at bat in Mets history.
Yes, no doubt about it. Devin, this has been a delight. Hopefully we can do it again. I want to have you back on just to talk about Bartolo Colon's home run, if that's okay.
Oh, my God. I could go an hour on Bartolo.
Can you give me the best detail? That story you did was great. Dan and I'm not certain if he came on the show. I know Dan and I talked about it for at least an entire show.
Oh, I got to go back and listen.
We love Bartolo Colon. Can you give us, like, the most fascinating detail from the one home run that Bartolo Colon hit in his major league career?
Yeah, it was May 4th in San Diego. Yeah. It was just, you know, it was as irrelevant a game as irrelevant games get. And yet it is probably the greatest game in Mets history simply because of that one at bat, right? And he crushed that thing.
Yeah.
And it took him like an hour and a half to get around the bases. It was so great. Every minute of us. And you got to go, if you haven't seen the clip, your listeners have to go back and listen, because it is one of the all-time great home run calls you will ever hear. And I have listened to Gary's call of it probably 200 times. I love it.
All right. So listen, we're going to have you back on in about a month or so when we're 15 games below 500. We'll be miserable together. Okay.
I'm ready. I can pencil the date in on my calendar pretty much. Yeah, okay. I'm putting it on May 12th. I got it. I'm putting it on my schedule.
All right. So you and I will talk again May 12th. We'll be 15.
May 13th. We'll talk to him.
Okay. So many ways to lose. The amazing true story of the best worst team in sports. I love that title. The author is Devin Gordon. He's a great writer. Check out the book, buy the book. And if you're a Met fan, read the story about Bartolo Colon's one home run at GQ. It was at GQ. Is that correct, Devin?
It was, yes.
Yes. Okay. Devin, we appreciate this. Thank you so much for doing it, man. It was worth the wait. We've been up all night waiting.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to keep you guys waiting. I'm such a dummy, but it was worth it. I had a blast, guys. Thank you so much.
It was great. Thank you. Good luck with the book, man. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Mike. I really enjoyed that. I thought he was very, very good.
Do you think it was worth the wait?
Mike, are you concerned at all that this was not a scheduled landscaping day? Stupidity.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.